Welcome to As the Story Grows. I'm Brian Patton. Today we welcome Ruan O'Meara from Ireland's No Spill Blood to the podcast. No Spill Blood's new record, Eye of Night, is out today on Spart Records. Ruan talks about the music scene in Dublin, getting into punk and synthesizers, the creative process for No Spill Blood, and what the future holds for the band. I loved getting to dive into No Spill Blood's discography this week, and I can't recommend it enough. Before we dive into the interview, let's talk about Furnace Fest.
I remember times I had, some were happy, some were sad. Memories being in the park is a crime, throwing up a thousand times. I've been through it, I feel fine, I went to school and did my time.
Furnace Festival has announced the almost full slate for the festival this year, and I just want to go through the lineup and talk about the different bands, who I'm excited about, who I am a little head scratching about why they're at Furnace Fest. Let's just do this thing. First up, we'll start with Friday Night, and the headliner for Friday Night at Furnace Fest is MXPX. I love MXPX. They are one of my top five favorite bands of all time. I've gotten to see MXPX a lot, and I feel like I've gotten to see them and Mike in various iterations a fair bit over the last few years. I guess not since COVID hit, but leading up to COVID, I saw Mike solo and MXPX in Philadelphia. I saw the MXPX All-Stars in Washington, D.C., and I interviewed Mike for my other podcast, which no longer exists, The Meltdown, and it seemed like at that time the MXPX All-Stars were really going to be what drove MXPX, but they haven't toured since then, so I don't know. We'll have to have Mike back on and talk about that. Also, in headlining spots, Hatebreed, which I assume is going to be on the Plug Your Hole stage, and then we have Anne Berlin and Reliant K. I don't know, are people who go to Furnace Fest really stoked about Reliant K? Like, I understand they fall under that, like, bubble of old school Christian punk or the emo scene that, like, Reliant K was on that Warped Tour emo scene for a while. But I don't know. Reliant K is a weird one for me. Hatebreed, I can't remember if it was 2002 or 2003 at Furnace Fest, but the Hatebreed pit was just sheer terror. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm going to die. It was probably the best and craziest mosh pit I've ever been in, but I just remember that very distinctly being like a holy shit moment in my life. Anne Berlin, I have my tour shirt from Anne Berlin's final tour in 2014. And look, Anne Berlin is back. So that didn't stick. But Anne Berlin playing. So those are like great headliners. Other sets that are really interesting to me, Hope's Fall is playing a Satellite Years set list. I know Satellite Years is a fan favorite. I really wish Hope's Fall would do a Magnetic North set. That would be amazing to me. Gideon's playing Knuckle Puck. Friday, we have the 90-pound Wuss reunion. That is super cool, super killer that 90-pound Wuss is playing again. Norma Jean is back at the festival again this year. Open Hand, Project 86, Piebald. Showbread is back. I guess they're not show dead after all. Sparta's playing Walls of Jericho. That was another name on Friday that stood out to me. I'm a huge Walls of Jericho fan. I've actually never gotten to see Walls of Jericho live, and that's super exciting. With Blood Comes Cleansing, Vain FM, a whole bunch of other bands announced for Friday, but those were the ones that stood out to me and that I was super stoked to see. As mentioned a few weeks ago, we jumped to Saturday, and headlining the main stage is Turnstile. Turnstile is back at Furnace Festival, and they will be closing out the main stage. And they will be closing out the main stage on Saturday night. We also have the Head Automatica reunion show. I was never a huge Glassjaw fan. I never got into Head Automatica, but I know people are stoked for that. Thursday is back at the festival. They played, I believe, the main stage in 21. Seosin with Anthony Green is reuniting for the festival, and Enter Shikari, who is, they have a new record coming out pretty soon, I believe. Also on Saturday, you have Becoming the Archetype, Extol, that's the Extol reunion, Foreign Hands, Gorilla Biscuits, which is a band I've gotten to see live, but Gorilla Biscuits is always fun, Living Sacrifice, Loathe, Mind Force, Terror, that's the Training for Utopia reunion on Saturday. That, again, is probably the set that I am most interested in for Furnace Fest. How Training for Utopia translates live in 2023. Yeah, that should be really cool. And I'm super stoked that Training for Utopia is playing again. We also have Will Haven. Will Haven's a band I absolutely love. And I don't think I've ever gotten to see Will Haven live. And when I looked at the listing, I didn't even notice Will Haven at first. And then I went back and I was like, oh shit, I love Will Haven. Youth of Today, Zayo, Zulu. Really cool Saturday set. And then on Sunday, the headliners are Bane and Pennywise. That works out. This is the third podcast in a row that I've talked about Bane. And yeah, that's super cool. Pennywise, I probably saw Pennywise at Warped Tour at one time, but I don't remember. We also got Haste the Day, Between the Buried and Me, Bouncing Souls. Bane, Pennywise, and Bouncing Souls all on a bill. Like, that just sounds phenomenal and like a lot of fun. We get the Plea for Purging reunion also on Sunday. As Cities Burn is playing, Armor for Sleep, the Blessed by a Broken Heart reunion, Chasing Victory reunion, Defeaters playing Sunday, Further Seems Forever doing a How to Start a Fire set. Then Goaty Hook, that jumped out to me. I did not expect to see Goaty Hook on the bill. That was a lot of fun. Another band that I was like, really? The Insiders. Youth Group Worship Ska is back. I like The Insiders. They're fun. I had Joe on the podcast. It was great talking to him. And they're just a band that sometimes you're like, really? The Insiders? I'm glad to see Ska at Furnace Fest. I guess Five Iron Frenzy played 2 years ago, last year. Five Iron played at one point. So this isn't the first time Ska has been at the festival. But yeah, The Insiders. That'll be fun. Judge is playing. May, One King Down, Prayer for Cleansing, Strife. Trenches, Jimmy Ryan's new band Trenches, is playing at Furnace Fest on Sunday. That'll be a lot of fun. And then Valley Heart. On the Songs and Stories podcast, Chad said that Braid is also playing Furnace Fest. So I'll be curious to see where they fit in. When this lineup came out, I was like, man, everything is stacked. But for some reason, I was also like, oh, I'm a little underwhelmed. When I look at the bands and I talk about it, I'm like, there's so many great bands playing and it's going to be a phenomenal time. Unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to make Furnace Fest. My wife and I are going to Spain for our 10-year wedding anniversary at the beginning of September. So I just don't know that without, you know, Furnace Fest inviting me to come do podcast stuff at the festival, that I will be able to make Furnace Fest this year. So again, email Furnace Fest. Write them on Twitter, write them on Instagram. Say, hey, we want As the Story Grows at Furnace Fest. I would love to be there. I absolutely want to be there. But I just don't think a trip to Spain and then a trip down to Furnace Fest are in the cards for me this year. All right, that's it for Furnace Fest. Furnace Fest Friday. I don't know if that's going to be the last time we talk about Furnace Fest between now and the time the festival starts. Probably not. Bands have to drop off for various reasons. Bands get added. This is not the final lineup. Chad had said like there were no more big names, but I think Braid's a pretty big fucking name that was not on that list that he just dropped on this Emery podcast. So I'm stoked to see what could happen in the future. All right. I hope you guys enjoyed this week's chat with Ruan Omira from No Spill Blood.
Good, good. We're just back from tour. We did a couple of weeks in Europe there with A Year of No Light from France. So that was great. Really, really great experience. It was like about 16 shows in total, I think.
Nice.
We did a lot of France, a lot of Germany, and a few other places, Hungary, Czech Republic, yeah, Switzerland. Yeah, it was great crack.
Where'd you grow up? Let's just go back.
Dublin City. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's where we're based. There's three of us in the band, myself, Roar on drums, and Matt on bass and vocals. Matt's from Cork originally. He's the only one that's not really from Dublin, but yeah, we've been based here for the last while. Yeah.
Nice. What was growing up like?
Cool. It's a good city, Dublin. I always thought that, like, it mightn't be true anymore, but I thought it was like a really kind of nice size for a city, mm-hmm. as in it wasn't too big, but there were still lots of things happening, lots of, like, you know, international acts coming through, and, you know, just from where we're placed in the continent of Europe, we get a lot of people starting and finishing their tours here and stuff. So I thought it was like not so big that you'd be anonymous, but also big enough that you can mind your own business as well.
Yeah. 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 That's cool. What got you into music?
I don't know. God, I've been gigging since I was about 14 or 15, really. I don't know. Just picked up the guitar one day. A few lads wanted to join. We started band as a joke, and then all of a sudden we were doing gigs, an even bigger joke.
Yeah.
But I kind of been always doing it.
Nice. So what made you pick up a guitar?
I don't know. When I was like around 12, I was a big grunge person, yeah. Like Nirvana and Afghan Whigs and all that kind of stuff, Pearl Jam even, Soundgarden. So yeah, it was all that. So like everybody was picking up guitars, I guess. But I think I was one of the only people that kind of kept it going.
Yeah. What was that transition from, like, guitar to into, like, synthesizers and keyboards?
It was a job that I ended up doing in a few other bands before this because no one else really wanted to do it, or it was kind of just a different, I always thought it was a bit different to do. Yeah. And I always loved it in music, and I always thought it was the strange sounds of, like, synths and 70s music, and so it was kind of like, yeah, I got my first synth when I was about 18, I think. And I just haven't stopped really since then. I've been collecting keyboards and playing in different bands over the years. I get a lot of fun out of it.
Yeah. You can really go down a rabbit hole with, like, analog and digital and micro synths and pocket synths. And now with, like, digital synths, it's like,
oh yeah. It's
crazy.
Yeah. More than ever because, like, even remember, like, when we started the band about 10 years ago, you couldn't get an analog synth anywhere unless you got it like a vintage thing, you know, that was working and the whole lot. They're very hard to get a hold of and very hard to use and maintain. But now these days you can get an analog synth in any corner of the street, you know, and it's really good, really cool that people have access to, like, modular very easy, and and all the developments in technology with digital synths and apps and the whole lot is brilliant as well.
Yeah. Do you have a preference between, like, analog and messing around with, like, something textile, or, like, do you like getting on the computer and, like, fucking around?
Yeah, I'm not digital really, I'm not really a computer guy. No, I never have been really, but I do see the value in that stuff.
Yeah.
It's not, I detest it or anything, but it's just that, yeah, I've always been, especially for this project, playing in a band, like, the you need a hands-on instrument to you know, to play. I think,
yeah,
there with a laptop and a MIDI controller, I don't know. I don't think it would last very long.
That's funny. You mentioned a lot of touring acts coming through, like, Dublin. What was the local scene like when you were, like, in secondary school and playing in bands and forming bands and getting your footing going?
Yeah, Dublin's always had a pretty healthy punk scene. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably where I kind of first fell. The first kind of scene that I kind of fell into, I guess, I would have been about 18 or 19 at the time. before that was just kind of bullshit, really. But like, by the time I kind of got involved with like things that are properly organized and a proper community, that would have been it. And that kind of still holds true today. The punk scene is very, very close and knit and very supportive in Dublin. There's a scene for everything here, really. I guess it was like playing shows in people's houses and weird, obscure venues and stuff. I really liked the humility of it all, and that it wasn't people trying to make it big. It was just people trying to, you know, have fun and do what they want to do, and, you know, not be dictated about how they do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you see bands like Pearl Jam's or your Nirvana's get big, and you're like, that's what I want to do. And then you discover punk and you're like, oh, I can actually do this.
Yeah. Then none of that shit matters.
Like, yeah.
You know, it's quite a relief.
Yeah. Yeah. How did No Spill Blood get started?
We were all friends for a long time before we started the band. I think it was initially as it happened, Matt was a friend of ours from Cork, and he recently moved to Dublin. And we were just like saying we should probably do something musically. So we started playing together with our first drummer at the time. It was Larkay. The three of us went to just, it was just an excuse to drink beer for the first while. You know, it was just like rent a rehearsal room, go in a few cans and bash out a few riffs and see what happens. So it was quite organic, really.
What was inspiring you guys and I guess still inspires you, like, sonically, like, to be like bass drums and synthesizers, right? Like,
yeah, it was kind of like, it was always a kind of a mesh of like lots of things, right? Because it wasn't, there wasn't really one band that we were trying to emulate but there was lots of bands we were trying to emulate. You know, we were trying to like rip off as many people as we could. And you know, it's not like a, we didn't lick it off a stone, as they say here. I guess the primary examples would be like the Melvins, right? Like the big riffs of the Melvins and that kind of stuff. We were very big into that. So the likes of Trans Am and Zombie as well, like the kind of synthesizer led bands that were doing really well at the time. And also lots of old music, lots of like prog rock, lots of like krautrock records as well, and then like bits of metal, you know, bits of like classic metal, bits of like Sabbath, like I always really like the when Sabbath used synthesizers and stuff, and so we always have that kind of stuff in mind. And I guess one big one would be Brainiac as well, because Brainiac were a band that I always really liked as a kid growing up, and I just loved how they used the keyboards, you know, that they mangled them and, you know, made some crazy sounds.
What's the evolution been like musically? Because listening to the discography, the EP to the full length to even the new stuff, it's like you seem to get heavier and darker with each release.
That's a good point. I think it was because, especially with the first records, it was a bit more of a punk kind of vibe, but there's a few moments in that where we were still figuring out what we were doing, and those recordings were done very early on into the project. There was a few moments when we were doing those songs where like we'd hit these kind of notes and like the bass and the synth would like sync up, and it was like, ooh, that's nasty, you know, like instead of like trying to play it like all airy fairy and melodic, and it was just like, no, when we actually stick to the same the notes or play harmonies even like that, it gets really fucking heavy, like, and it's like heavy, like, you know, we didn't expect to get. And it was like then, so like the second record was a bit more of a development of that as well. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's something that we leaned into naturally, I guess, over the course. There's definitely a lot more of it on the new records, but we found ourselves in a place, we like in between those two records, between Heavy Electricity and the new one, Eye of Night, we had written a lot of material that we ended up scrapping.
Yeah.
Basically a whole other record of music that we just kind of, because we found it was getting a bit formulaic, I thought as well. Mm. It was like, the hard thing about writing music in this project is that like, essentially what we're doing is we have a bass guitar with four strings and we have a monophonic synth, which plays one note, right? Mm-hmm. A lot, you know, that's the core of the band. So that kind of limits kind of where you can go and like, and the moves you can pull off and stuff. So like, and sometimes something's good, like you can kind of rely on the kind of reliables a bit too much.
Yeah.
So that's why we end up kind of like, if those songs are kind of doing the same thing a bit too much or referencing earlier work a bit too much. So we jettisoned nearly all of them. I think one of them kind of made it through. But
Where'd the name come from?
Name came from, it came from, as most bands would do, we were just blitzing a massive list of like names and references and, you know, things lifted from pop culture and stuff. The No Blood one stuck because it was taken from the Ongo Bongo song and from the Island of Dr. Moreau, the book Island of Dr. Moreau, there's passages in that in the movies. And it's the same passage where Devo got "Are We Not Men?" That line from as well. So like, first of all, we just thought it sounded good as a band, like the kind of caveman, No Spilled Blood, meat-headed aspect to it. But also it was because it was kind of in this kind of thing where I love the Island of Dr. Moreau, the book and the films. And we loved new wave music and Oingo Boingo, and especially Devo. Devo were one of the best of all time. And we just thought it was in this kind of little sweet spot where it was kind of hitting a few things at once, and it also kind of worked.
Yeah, yeah. How'd you guys get connected with Sergeant House?
Sergeant House, we got connected with because at the time when we started the band, Sergeant House were actually based in Dublin as well. They had like a European office. The drummer, original drummer, Lark Kay, he was in a band called Adebisi Shank, who were already on Sergeant House. So our demos kind of got sent to them pretty early on, and they liked them when they put them out.
Nice. I tried to find some information online. I could not. Did you guys take a hiatus after Heavy Electricity in there, or was it just like a long time between records?
Yeah, it was a long time. It wasn't a hiatus. We were always kind of gigging and stuff.
Okay.
And again, we were writing a lot, and we did a good bit of touring in that time as well. And as I said, we would have had an album out a lot sooner if we didn't scrap everything.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we did.
Yeah.
And also it was COVID as well.
Yeah.
Slapped a few years on that for us. Like the new album was like pretty much done before COVID hit.
Oh shit.
We kind of mixed it over COVID, but we recorded everything. In Ireland there was like a time, like during COVID, there was a massive lockdown here. It was kind of more harsh than a lot of other places, and there was no concerts at all. People weren't even able to meet up. And this went on when other countries were still getting on with things and doing shows and all. Mm. So that itself even put a hold on everything for us. Even like, and the tour we just completed was supposed to be last year.
Oh wow!
Like this time last year as well. So like, yeah, we're just kind of coming out at the end of things. We were looking for a label as well. So we got hooked up with Spart in that time frame, and then that kicked it another year as well. So there's a few factors. We never stopped, but we just wanted to make sure the record was good enough. Really, yeah. I think was the main point.
Yeah, yeah. What led you guys to Spart?
We were just like, what labels are doing fucking cool stuff at the moment.
Yeah.
what have you bought recently? For me, it was like I'm obsessed with a Barancy Pazuzu, on Sparks, and also the Mesa record that came out last year as well. I'm a big fan of them. And just overall, I really like their vibe. I even like the fact that they do reissues and they're very productive. They have a lot of stuff coming out all the time, and it's just like that weird kind of experimental element of metal, you know, that doesn't necessarily have to be metal as such.
Yeah,
I thought it was kind of a no-brainer really that it would be. It would be amazing if they would talk to us about it, and they were. Yeah. They did.
Is it tough? We're here, you know, February 2023, and you're releasing this record that has been done for what, almost 3 years now?
Yeah.
what's that process like of just like, was there a point there where you're just like, this will never come out, or like,
yeah,
we're not gonna make it as a band?
it goes through waves, right? Like the whole time, like, it's not the first time I've been sitting on a project for a while as well, and it seems to be more the norm these days, especially if you want to do something through a label.
And that you generally
will be sitting on it for a while. Like the idea of banging things out, unless you're already set up with a contract and stuff, it's quite tough. So like you go through phases of having a lot of faith in the project.
Yeah.
And then not at all. Like, and it's like, this actually sucks, especially through the mixing process. When you're doing the mixing, you go through so many phases of like, I fucking hate this record. It's so shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, why would anybody listen to it? You know? And then like later on you might go, oh geez, this is really good. You know? And so I don't know if you're not a reliable commentator at that stage.
Right.
It feels great to have people finally hear it and stuff. It's out on Friday, right? So it's out in a couple of days. So I'm looking forward to seeing what people think about it, and my friends and other people I know in other bands and stuff. So it'd be great to finally have it out there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Record is called Eye of Night. Where did the title of the record come from?
I came up with the title, and it was lifted from something again, which I can't remember what. How the songs are composed lyrically and stuff is that Matt is our vocalist, and he generally writes, like, when we're doing like a long player record like this, there's a narrative. He writes kind of basically a story for the whole thing, and then breaks that down into songs, and like there's different themes and different kind of incidents, occurrences, and situations. And he was sent all this stuff to us, you know, to digest, and kind of we're getting the concept going for the record, and I saw that somewhere, like it was in a text somewhere, I think I saw it, and I thought it suited the sound and the lyrical content as well.
Yeah. What are the lyrical themes on the album?
It's usually pretty nasty stuff. It's always about a protagonist, you know, going through a journey of like tribulations and paranoia and otherworldly and outer body experiences, some kind of trippy kind of stuff in there as well about it. But like the track Ossian it has an insect, like a kind of a Kafka situation with it.
Yeah.
You know, like, so there's all these kind of like different kind of scenarios of it's a horror story, really, you know.
Nice. Who did the album artwork for you guys?
That one we're pretty happy with. That we got to license a piece of art by Michael Whelan.
Yeah.
Who is quite a famous dude. He did a lot of old metal album covers, particularly the Cirith Ungol records, which I always loved, and Sepultura. Yeah. And he's also very famous, more famous for books probably than he is for records. Like he did like a lot of the old 80s Stephen King covers. He did a lot of like fantasy and sci-fi art. I think he's most famous for is for Bat Out of Hell. He did the cover art for that.
Nice.
But he's a big dude anyway, and we contacted him. I found a piece online. It's called Lasting Integrity, and we were entertaining a whole different a bunch of artists and different options about, but like I had my heart in setting that one from the jump. That's so cool. I'm delighted that it worked out because it's a cool thing to have.
Yeah. Yums Up Friday. You guys have been sitting on this record for so long. Are you like? Have you been in the process of like writing new material, or are you just like been so focused on getting this?
No, we're currently working on a new record. We have one song that we were doing at the shows there in the tour, yeah. And that's what we're going to focus on now for the next while. We're going to get this show, the record out. We've got our album launch in Dublin on the 23rd of March, and then we're going to focus heavily on. Getting some material together and hopefully look towards recording before the end of the year, maybe in autumn.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our intro music was written and composed by Jeremy Hunt. The As the Story Grows theme is by Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, you can join us at patreon.com/asthestorygrows. Be a part of our community and join the ongoing conversation over on Discord. If you enjoy this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening. I never felt so young and alive as when I'm diving into a tomb. And now I'm learning as I listen along, and the wheels are turning, and I started a song. One good word, and I'm gone. What's that word?